The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 21st, 2025.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Boy.
Happy Earth Day.
Yes. No, tomorrow's Earth Day.
Oh, well, happy the day before.
That's good. I'm really excited about today's show. Joining me in the studio are two amazing women, Charlie Toledo, director of Susco Intertribal Council, and Madonna Feather Cruz, who is a registered member of the Round Valley Indian Tribe, Round Valley, California, and a third-generation member of Susco Intertribal Council. I am honored to have both women with me this morning, and we'll be talking about the Intertribal Council and issues that are affecting their lives today, and also some of the struggles that women are going through. Madonna is working very, very closely with Indigenous women, and I hope that she will give us a little commentary on that, give us a little update. But, you know, I was thinking really hard about this show. It's such an honor to have these two women. I mean, they're very powerful, very spiritual women that I really respect with my heart and soul. And I was thinking about when I was at the women's conference, I had a little vertigo, and I was supposed to do a little speech, and I have Charlie Toledo here in the studio with me, and she did a prayer at that time, and it was amazing that the vertigo went away for 2 hours, and I was able to go ahead and do the presentation that I was supposed to do. And I thought, you know, with the way the world is today, I mean, it's just sometimes my head just goes, my God, let's bring some spirituality, let's bring some truth, and especially with the Pope dying, you know, and his last words talking about bringing love and compassion into the world. I mean, we are just one family. We are the family of the earth. You know, I love this. That I love when I'm going to play this song by the children's choir, and it's called "The Earth Is Our Mother." I just love that song because it reminds us that we are all children of the earth when we are family. So anyway, I'm going to turn it over to Charlie Toledo right now. Charlie, good morning to you, and thank you so much for offering us this prayer. And so we're going to just go into it. And to people, if you're driving the car, just relax. Don't say, if you want to pull over and stop, that would be wonderful too, but just be aware that you don't have to close your eyes or anything. And for the folks that are listening at home, find yourself a nice comfortable chair and just sit back, and let's go ahead and let's listen to this beautiful, beautiful prayer.
Thank you, Elaine. It's such an honor to be here this morning with you both, and Madonna too. So on behalf of the First People, we're in the territory of the Pomo people and on the cusp of the Coast Miwok or Great Renteria. But all the people that were here for thousands and thousands of years lived on this land and cared for the land. And that's the reminder that we're getting every day, every sunrise, you know, that we are a part of this beautiful earth, a living mother who's carrying us. We're traveling around the sun. The sun is the father holding us as we are traveling through the cosmos. Sometimes we get caught up in the small day-to-day issues of our life, but if we take, you know, start each morning kind of that little first dawn, the first light, before sunrise, that's our time to pray, just to wake up and give thanks for another day on this beautiful earth. We give thanks to our ancestors, those who came before us, on whose shoulders we stand. We give thanks and prayers of protection and guidance for our children's children's children. And I'd like to offer a women's warrior song. It's an Ojibwe song that started in the eastern part of Canada and it moved down into the United States, across the continent, and when I was doing cultural exchanges, even down into Mexico. So Jim Big Bear is one of our elders, and he said that songs are like living beings. They travel like the wind. They don't know any boundary. So I just would like to offer this song. It's been used in a lot of marches across the continent. The Women Rising, it's a woman's blessing song, a woman's warrior song. It gives us the strength and the stamina to stay focused on what our intention is, and then also to keep moving forward. Hey, 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 yah-hee-yo-ho. Yah-hee-yo, hee-hee, yah-hee-yo, yah-hee-yo, hee-hee, yah-hee-yo. Hey, 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 yah-hee-yo, yah-hee-yo, hee-hee, yah-hee-yo, yah-hee-yo, hee-hee, yah-hee-yo. Really easy words. Maybe you want to sing it with me. I'll sing out two more verses. Hey, 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 yah-hee-yo, hee-hee, yah-hee-yo, yah-hee-yo, hee-hee, yah-hee-yo. Yah-hee-yo, yah-hee-yo, oh, 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 oh. And then just remember that we're not alone. You know, the Earth Mother's holding us as we are moving and traveling around the sun. The sun, the Father, is holding us as we were traveling through the universe, through the stars, like a piece of wood through the river, following the currents of the river to the sea. And just keeping our intentions clear, compassion, joy, and sharing. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh.
Ho, ho. Charlie, that was beautiful. That just touched my heart so deeply to feel. And also, the fact that you mentioned that we're spinning in this beautiful universe, you know, this magical mystery tour that we're on, you know, and here we are, radio, doing this beautiful, beautiful prayer. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Well, I have a few announcements to make, and I'll tell you something. One of the things that's going on is there is so many protests going on, I can't even begin to tell you. And May 1st is going to be the first one. Let me give you some short ones. From May 1st through the 5th, there's going to be 5 days of action and protest. And what I would suggest is that you go and the Peace and Justice Center at 707-575-8902. Or you can email them at peace@pjcsoco.org, and they will give you all the information. But it's going to be, there's going to be an action from May 1st to May 5th. And, of course, May 1st is going to be International Workers' March Day, and they're calling on bringing attention to immigrant rights and all those other things that are going on. And I think it's very important that people find out about it. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. You know, I want to do a shout-out. Saturday was another protest in Santa Rosa really showed up, and so I want to say a big shout out to all the people that showed up and let their voices be heard. Because, you know, if we don't speak out, we're going to lose a lot. And we have to remind ourselves every day, at least I remind myself every day, that in our Constitution, the first line is we the people. And we still have not quite lived up to, like Martin Luther King said it so beautifully, all we're asking the United States to do is to live up to their promise. And I don't think they've lived up to their promise yet. And I think is what is happening right now is like the dirt is been shoveled up, and we're looking and we're seeing all the negativity in the world, and now we have an opportunity to change. And the first thing we have to do is become aware that we need a change, and the second thing we need to do is stand up and let our voices be known. Another announcement I have is the National Organization for Women, the Sonoma County Chapter, is going to be having their business meeting this evening. All people are invited. Go to www.sonomacountynow.org and all the information of how you can get onto the Zoom and all that other good stuff that happens. Well, that's enough for announcements now. Now we have a very special, special part of our show. You know, tomorrow is Earth Day. You know, April 22nd is Earth Day. Earth Day is the... They call it there, honoring Rachel Carson today, the woman who changed America and greatly influenced the environmental movement with her revolutionary book, Silent Spring. Earth Day honors Rachel Carson today, a woman who changed America and influenced the environmental movement in her evolutionary book, Silent Spring. I'll never forget when someone handed me that book. I was a single parent at the time, and I thought, oh my God, what am I feeding my daughter? And it was a real awakening up for me. Silent Spring is an environmental science book by Rachel Carson. The book was published on September 27th, 1962, documenting the adverse environmental effects caused by the indiscriminate use of pesticides. And here we are, 2025, and we're still struggling with that. And also the theme, this is the 55th Earth Day that is happening. So that means for 55 years, the population has been trying to make the world aware of climate change. Well, we're aware of it, but our government hasn't caught up with us. In fact, I heard a rumor on one of the on YouTube, one of the programs I was listening to, that the Trump administration is actually trying to destroy all the environmental work that's already been done. I mean, what, these people are nuts. I don't know what it is. Anyway, this year, the theme for Earth Day is Our Power, Our Planet, which is championing solar, wind, hydroelectric, geothermal, and tidal generated energy. Boy, that's a mouthful. But that's a lot going on, and we need to pay attention. But, you know, in honor of Earth Day, I have a special treat. We're kind of making it I think it's becoming kind of a tradition, don't you think, Ken?
We've done it every year at this time.
I know. You know, Ken, I consider him a climate pioneer. While attending San Jose State University in 1970, he was one of the many students who buried a new 1970 Ford Maverick on the campus cafeteria building front lawn on February 20th, 1970 in San Jose. The event was part of the week-long, it was called a survival fair. Why did they call it a survival fair, Ken? Do you remember?
Well, we were very concerned about our survival. Remember, we had the Vietnam War at the same time, and then also we had the wake-up call that, my gosh, the way we have been doing things is actually causing terrific environmental damage. It was a professor, John Sterling, philosophy had this idea and got students interested. And so the students were asked to raise money to buy a car. Well, we wanted a real gas guzzler, like a Cadillac or something. But with our student budget, we could only afford a Maverick. And after a long, elaborate funeral procession for the internal combustion engine, basically, and other cars, we brought the car to a big pit, which was dug, and buried it. We emptied the fluids out of it. But it was a big, elaborate thing to do that. It was on February 20th, 1970.
Amazing. Well, I want to go back a little bit. You know, prior to doing this, you know, you were kind of a conservative young man. You know, you had just discovered Einstein at that time, but you also started this Engineers for Awareness group, which had a lot to do with the environment. How did that interact with the bearing of the car? Was that part of it? And also, the other part of it is, what was the feeling like when they were bearing that car? What was going on? How do you feel the atmosphere was with the students?
Well, it was a flashy enough event where it got New York Times to print an article about it. So that was mainly it. It was just to get the word out that, hey, this is a wake-up call.
Well, how was it when you were part of the Engineers of Awareness? What was that about relation to the environment?
Awareness, we were trying to become, as engineers, aware of our position. You know, perhaps we're going to be drawn into the military-industrial complex and continue this war that was going on, Vietnam War at the time, and all the wars to come after it. And so we were concerned that way, and then also for the environment. So we were one of the student groups that were on board to support this burial of the car.
How do you feel about, you know, here we are, it's been 55 years that we've been celebrating Earth Day. So it was 55 years ago that you actually did this action. How do you feel when you think about what's going on? You hear that they're destroying all the EPA and all the different things that are going on. What are some of your thoughts that you have here in 2025?
Well, I hope all the tornadoes and wildfires and those kind of natural disasters that are amplified by the climate warming of using internal combustion engines, for one thing, will finally awaken people. You know, you can have the politicians saying blah blah blah, you know, there is no climate change, but hey, if you have a house that's just been destroyed, I think you're going to have a different idea about that.
Well, it's so interesting because when it comes to fire, it's just people don't realize that how fires and how these things spread because of some of the issues around climate change.
Well, it's the high winds, like we experienced in 2017 in Santa Rosa. We lost 5,000 houses here. That's an awful lot for our city. It's not a huge city. We maybe have 100,000 people here. So it was a real wake-up call. That I never thought that I would be afraid for my life as a fire that's raging and came within just a mile of where we lived.
I know, it was amazing. I'll never forget that day. We were at the studio and Edgar came in and gave us a sheet and said he wanted us to announce all the different places that were he had to evacuate. And you start reading the list and all of a sudden he says, "Oh my God, that's our neighborhood." I mean, it was. We were only a few blocks away and it was terrifying. You know, I never thought I would live to see where I would have to evacuate or even be in such danger. So when you start looking at it, there's a lot to think about it. Well, Ken, I want to thank you so much for sharing that. And I mean, I think it's very important that people recognize how long we've been working on this issue of climate change. I mean, this is our Earth, our Mother Earth. If we don't take, it's like if you're not good to your mother, you know, she's not going to take care of you, right?
Well, it's also important that when you're getting out and protesting, remember, this is for the long haul. It's not just for, one Saturday and you're out protesting. This is for the long haul. Imagine 55 years ago that our student group was doing this kind of thing. And so, you know, we need the help of everybody. So come on and join us.
Right, and what they were calling for, too, is, you know, Ronald Reagan at that time shut down all the campuses. I mean, what I don't understand, you know, to me, the idea of peace is so simple. All we have to do is take a time out and start talking to each other, start looking at the issues honestly. And I don't know what stops us from doing that. So thank you so much, Ken, for sharing that. And one last thing, I know that you have a little website, your Scent of Light. Why don't you give your website, how people can hear that you have the 10 words on the Scent of Light? Why don't you give your website?
I have a series of about 5-minute vignettes. And you're welcome to, it's called the Scent of Light, and you can see it at my website, KennethEnorton.com.
Well, thanks a lot, Ken, and thanks a lot for being in the studio with me every week. Ted is also not only is my co-producer, he's also my webmaster at www.womenspaces.com. I hope you guys always visit that. We have all our shows archived, both the television shows as well as the radio show.
Plus, we have announcements, and we'll include these announcements, especially what's happening on May 1st.
Right, and actually, when you have an event or anything that's happening and you want to let folks know about it, please email me at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, middle initial B-H-O-L-T-Z, @gmail.com, and we're so happy to post it for you. Well, we're going to take a musical break now, and then I'm very excited because when we come back, we'll be talking to these marvelous women, and the song that I'm going to be playing is "The Earth is Our Mother," sung by the Revels Children Choir. What I like about this song is these are young people. I mean, when you listen to them, you hear the sound of their voice. You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking about my own great-granddaughter, Satori. You know, they have this voice when they're young before their voice matures. And it's just so sweet. And when you hear these young children sing, it really gives you this feeling like the earth is our mother. you know, it was so interesting in the prayer that Charlie offered to us over the air this morning was so interesting when she talked about we're spinning around in this in the universe. You know, we're part of this huge, vast universe. I mean, when you look at the Hubble telescope, when they try to find the Earth, it's like a little pinpoint. They can hardly find it. You can hardly see ourselves. And it's just a miracle that we're here. And to think that we don't fall off. I mean, the gravity just holds us here. It's just amazing. And why don't we ever sit down and just think about that? Think about what a beautiful, beautiful experience. This is a magical mystery ride that we really do not understand. But one thing we do know is if we don't take care of our Earth, it's not going to take care of us. So we're going to go ahead and play that song. When we return, I will be talking with Charlie Toledo, the executive director of Cisco International Intertribal Council, and Madonna Feather Cruz, who's a registered member of the Round Valley Indian Tribe, and we're going to be talking about the indigenous world and some of the challenges they have and a lot of good things. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that song, The Earth Is Our Mother.
The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. The earth is our mother. We must take care.
Earth is our mother, and we must never lose sight of that. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And joining me in the studio are two special guests, Charlie Toledo and Madonna Feather Cruz. Welcome, ladies. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you.
Let's hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Do you mind if I tell my folks just a little bit about you? You know, Charlie Toledo, I've known Charlie for a long time. This is the first time I've ever actually sat in a room with her, so it's really a thrill. She's a native to New Mexico. She's been the executive director for Cisco Intertribal Council community-based organization since 1992, located in Napa, California. So you came all the way from Napa this morning.
Yes, I drove over the hills.
I hope it was a beautiful ride.
It is, usually.
She has experience as a public speaker, a presenter, and community organizer in regional, statewide, national, and international forums. Since 1982, she has worked in alternative healthcare fields as well as a background in mediation for individuals, families, and organizations. She has been an organic gardener since 1978. She has a lifelong commitment to social justice and international work on human rights and environmental social justice issues. Charlie is an active participant of several human rights and climate change boards, including an advisor to WIN and consultant status with the United Nations. The United Nations? That's amazing. You consult? What do you consult in?
Consultative status, that's what that's called, is NGO, non-governmental organizations that get consultative status. It's a registration status, a NGO or non-governmental, what we call community-based organizations or nonprofit organizations can get. So I was the chair for about 15 years, and I met the WIN director in 1996, a year after the 1995 International Women's Conference in Beijing that I attended. We went under an umbrella organization and went to that. It was 30,000 women from around the world, and we defined human rights
better
than it has ever been defined in the history of humans.
Well, they keep trying. What's so interesting is they have it defined, but they won't follow it.
Well, no, a lot of countries in the world are following it. the United States isn't. The United States is one of the only governments that has never signed a human rights treaty. And there's been three of them. But the Beijing platform is the working model that many, many countries are following.
In your experience, you know, that's a very interesting point, Charlie, that the United States has not signed any of these treaties. What do you think is the resistance?
Well, I think they're sick. It's a sick country. This United States was born on the blood and bones of the Native American people. People say that, oh, it's this and that. It has an idealized version of what it is, but the reality, it was born on the mass murder, the rape, pillage, and stealing of the First Peoples' lands. Here in California, it was fully inhabited by tribes, and as late as the 1850s was when the Europeans invaded here, so it's not a long time ago. It's my grandparents, like it's Madonna's mother, her grandmother, that experienced that, the genocides that occurred here in California and in the United States. So it's an illusion that the United States is free for all. It's an illusion of human rights, and that's obviously an illusion because they would sign, like all the other countries of the world except Iran and Somalia, human rights for women and children. There have been three different international treaties, and then the climate change treaties. They've never signed any of those.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, and I don't know why this popped in my mind, but I was thinking of J.D. Vance, our vice president, going and visiting the Pope. And the Pope sends, it doesn't want to see him, but sends one of his people to train him on what compassion is. I mean, when I think of that, you know, I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about. We have to have more compassion, not only just for ourselves, but for what the ground that we're walking on is. I often think about with Israel, what's going on in Israel, that there's never been the healing over the Holocaust. There's never been that discussion. So there's a lot of resentment or whatever is going on rather than take care of it and try to have peace. And I think it's the same way with the United States. They don't want to stand up and take responsibility, say, oh, it wasn't my generation. But we're still living off the laurels of that.
Yeah, everybody here is living on the benefits of the genocides of the United States, the genocides of California. Any property owner is basing, you know, is thriving because of the genocides. They're genocides that occurred. And what happened in Germany during World War II, the Nazis came here to the United States to study what the United States government did to the Native people, how to create genocide and a mass Holocaust of a whole ethnic group.
Oh boy,
and that's why the United States was slow to get into World War II, because they were supporting the Nazis in the beginning. And obviously that's obvious that there's still a whole lot of people that support that whole precept of, you know, ethnic, whatever it's called.
Well, it seems like it keeps reoccurring. It keeps coming back. It doesn't go away.
Well, it hasn't gone away because you have to get the weed out. You've got to pull the whole root. And so if we're based, this country's based on denial, it's based on a huge lie, the myth of discovery. That's a myth. It wasn't discovered. It wasn't lost. So anyway, our organization, Seskal Intertribal Council, the reason we organized was to preserve Native American traditions and culture. We have a land base to anchor our work that gives us. We actually went in 1998 and purchased 23 acres in Child's Pope Valley. And just this past year, we completed a mural that's dedicated to the survivors of the bloody runs out of the Napa Valley up into Lake County. It's right along Child's Pope Valley Road. So part of the healing has to come with truth. And until the truth is told, there can be no healing. So that's why we're still stuck in this kind of loop of denial and lies. In Israel, everything that's happening in Israel is paid for by U.S. taxpayers. I lived in Israel. I lived in the kibbutz in 1972 for 7 months. So I was there in the early days of that. And when the Palestinians started being put in, what do they call them, internment camps, really is what they were, but they were considered refugee camps. But when I traveled back as part of a peace delegation 22 years later, and it was a third generation being raised in a internment camp, which was disgusting. And so what's happening in Gaza is also paid by U.S. taxpayers.
Well, you know, it's interesting that when you bring all these things up, because in my own mind, as a woman, as a mother, as a great-grandmother now, I mean, my God, I think to myself, what is it? You know, here you've been on the United Nations. You know, you've been working with women. You've been working with tribal injustice for a long, long time. What do you think, you know, this is getting off a little bit from our conversation, but what do you think stops us as a human race from what is it? I mean, okay, they say it's greed, it's capital, but I think it's a lot deeper.
Well, it's a lack of self-love. I just had this conversation yesterday in spring because somebody said, oh, follow the money. I said, no, you have to follow the love. The people that have been really brutalized in childhood and traumatized, they cannot have compassion and love because they weren't protected as children. They were abused. And all the white males that are being so abusive and taking us back to the Stone Age are trying to, they were all, beaten, probably raped as children. And that's why that's normal to them. That's how they were taken care of. So they have a deep anger about not being protected as children. You know, the essence of all violence is child abuse.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting.
I was a midwife, too. I was doing home birth when it was illegal. I was committing 3 felony offenses every time we assisted in the early 1976, 78, where my children were born at home. So that was a felony offense, child endangerment. I went on for the next 5 years to assist other women until it became a legal option. But that was part of my journey to world peace, was because I had been exploring that since 1966 when I was in high school. What's the essence of war? And what my explorations took me to, as far as the United States being the principal perpetrator in the last 100 years of wars and genocides, was the violent birth practices that the Western world, the industrialized United States, has. So then that's when I devoted 10 years of my life to converting the birth practices to holistic home birth, gentle awakenings, treating, respecting the mother in labor, respecting the family, and then especially greeting the newborn infant with love and with undivided attention. And so that's the meditation I've been doing on the current, I don't call them my presidents because they're not my anything. They're just poor, abused children that have grown into awfully reactive adults. But I just imagine that I was a midwife at their births and that I greeted them with love. I apologized for the way they were treated as children, as they weren't protected. And then just gave them that. And I just still do that meditation. I give them undivided attention.
It's so interesting when you say that because, I think of all this hoopla around, about abortion, saving the fetus. And when you start thinking about it, that has nothing to do with the child, the born that comes into the world that we have to really pay attention to. Well, I want to tell a little bit about Madonna and then ask her to weigh in a little bit here on what she's doing. Madonna Feather Cruz is a registered member of the Round Valley Indian Tribe, Round Valley, California. Where is Round Valley?
Mendocino County.
I never heard of it until I read your bio. I thought, where the heck is Round Valley? And a third generation member of the Cisco Intertribal Council, her grandmother Norma Knight and her mother Denise Feather were some of the original founders of Cisco Indian Council. She has participated in activities and programs since childhood. She now serves on many boards in California Indian County, and she brings her exuberance and cultural background to the goals and to the collective benefit of the California tribes and tribal organizations. Would you like to add anything else?
No, that's okay.
Well, you'd like to weigh in a little bit? Anything you'd like to comment on what Charlie just had to say?
I mean, there's a lot to say, in this very short time. So I won't get into politics right now.
Okay. Well, let's start. That's okay. Charlie, let's start. Let's talk about the Cisco Council, the Intertribal Council, its mission and its challenges, and how it began and how it was developed.
So I described the current mission, but it was developed when there was a freeway going in the southern part of Napa. It's called the Southern Crossing, 1972. And a village, a Native American village, was being dug up. And Jim Big Bear King, who's one of our elder mentors, who also was one of the original founders of the Cisco Indian Council back in the early 1970s with Madonna's grandmother and grandmother. And her dad also. But they saw this village being dug up, and so Jim Big Bear just went down there, which was really revolutionary at the time. He was 6'4" with hair down to his waist. And he said, if you're going to keep digging up my people, you're going to have to shoot me. And so they had to stop the excavation, and he understood Kapler's Indian laws, which are federal laws regarding Indian people within the United States that most Indian people are not aware of or weren't back then. They are now. And so they had to stop construction. And Susco was the name of that Putwin village. And so they took the name of that village site that was being desecrated. And it what ended up happening is Governor Brown, Senator Cranston at the time, they set up a study that ended up went on for 3 years. They brought all the tribes of California together the first time since the genocides and the invasions of California. And they created what is now called the Native American Heritage Commission. And it was protocols for the state what to do with funerary remains, village remains, and human remains around Native Americans. And that became a national model about 10 years after that, 1982, 83, became NAGPRA, the National Association for Graves and Preparation. I forget what graves and articles of funerary articles. So NAGPRA is federal, so those are felony offenses if you do any of that stuff, if you desecrate grave sites or have possession of Native American artifacts or human remains. And it's unfortunate people still have those in their collections.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting when you start talking about the past and how ignorant we really are. I always tell this story when I went back to school when I was 30 years old, and I was a single parent at the time. It was very conservative. I come from a Jewish family. You know, they kissed the ground when they came from Russia and Poland, all that kind of stuff. So as far as I was concerned, the United States was just that it was godsend, right? So now I come to school. It's the height of the American, the Vietnam War, and it's also the part where they're having Native American studies and African American studies. So I decide to take a Native American class. You know, I want to find out about it. So this reminded me of this story when you talked about your father having hair down to his butt, you know, all the way down. It reminded me of the teacher I had in the Native American, this beautiful Native American man, tall with black hair all the way down halfway down, and I'm a 30-year-old woman, you know, don't know what I'm doing, right? And all of a sudden he starts telling about when they put the smallpox in blankets. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I went, oh, my God, I always thought the Indians were the bad guys. And here comes this beautiful man walking up to me and looks me right in the eye and says, oh, Miss Pine, and where did you get that idea? I said, from television. You know, I realized how ignorant I was. So after that, and I became a journalism major, the one thing that I want to ask that always inspires me is where did your father, Madonna, get the confidence to stand up to this and to start something like this?
Because it was Jim Big Bear King. He wasn't her father, but her father was involved in that movement.
But where do they get the confidence?
I mean, well, it's a survival. If you're up against the wall, you got no place else to go but forward.
Well, that's a good one. You're up against the wall. You have nowhere else to go but forward. You know, people need to realize that because we're up against a wall right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, and some of us have lived up against the wall. So that's what motivates us, you know, because people always say, what motivates you, you know, and it's, you know, it's to bring the world back into balance. And our stories are ancient, you know, 30,000-year-old histories, oral traditions that tell us that we were going to be in this time. You know, this past 5,000-year cycle was a prophesied, and fortunately right now we're in a new cycle. 2013, we entered the Aquarian Age. The Piscean Age ended in 1986. So now the Earth and our astrological alignments, that peace and joy will come to this Earth. It's already here. And that old patriarchy, I always say the analogy I use, because I grew up on a farm, was that, you know, when you cut the head off a chicken, it runs around for a while.
My grandmother did that.
Well, it makes a bloody mess, and the chicken just doesn't know it's dead yet. So that's to keep in mind with what we're going through right now. Just kind of stand back from the chicken. and then let it fall over.
It's funny that you bring that up because I was born in East LA, you know, on Brooklyn Avenue. My grandmother had a huge little farm, and she would come. It was when she was going to pluck the all the feathers and everything, and there would be the chicken running. I go running after, go get the chicken, Elaine. That's a great analogy, right?
Well, that's from my childhood because I'm a descendant of the Towa people. So my grandfather was taken as a 7-year-old child and put into be a servant in a Spanish household in New Mexico. And so we grew up, my early childhood in New Mexico, my grandfather was a chili farmer. And my parents grew up without money. You know, they were just in a barter society. And when I tell children that in schools, because we go out to schools all the time to talk to kids, you know, I said, you know, my family didn't have money. And they say, oh, you were poor. I said, oh, no, we weren't poor. We had everything we needed. And by today's standard, we have been extremely wealthy because we had free-range beef, you know, organically free-range chicken, fresh eggs, organically grown heritage seed from beans, corn, and chili.
So you have all those memories. I have memories like that, too. You know, the simple life. It more, you know, even though it was hard, it was still the simple life because you worked with people, you communicated, there was more cooperation. And I think that's what we need more and more and more.
Yeah, strong communities that take care of each other. I think with all the disasters we've gone through, because Napa, I've lived in Napa since 1972, and that's ground central for climate change. We went through 7 evacuations around flooding. We went through 5 huge firestorms where there were massive evacuations and loss of home and property. Some of my friends lost their homes twice, 3 years apart. Just enough time to rebuild and lose it again. So that's what's put me, you know, in the forefront of climate change, because I was at that time, 10 years I spent on a low-income oversight board to the state of California, and I took on the climate change committee, which nobody was on it at the time, so that meant I could talk about whatever I wanted. And that's where I addressed and brought those issues to the forefront of the state, because that was the California Public Utilities Commission, which manages gas, electricity, water, and telephone. It was an influential position that was able to really shift California's awareness about climate change and what the real things are. So when you mentioned the thing you forgot to mention that our organization is focused on is hemp. Hemp. And so the state agencies that I'm consulting with now at this time around the electrification of California is $100 million going into that right now, $10 million a year. I was asked to submit a proposal because of all the proposals, none of them were organic or renewable or sustainable. They were talking about going from big oil to lithium. I said, lithium is as poisonous as big oil. We need to start talking about hemp. And nobody in the whole state of California around the electrification of California, around climate change, around the issues of sustainability and resiliency, they weren't even talking about hemp. It was not on the radar. And so I submitted a proposal. It got accepted. So that put it into the discussion. And that's what is so important now with Earth Day, to talk about sustainable, renewable, safe energy sources. Hemp was deregulated in 1945 because big oil, big lumber, and the cotton industry they couldn't compete, so they criminalized it. So it's really important right now to move hemp, which is a non-narcotic. Hemp is different from cannabis. Hemp is a fiber crop. It grows. In California, you could grow 3 crops a year. It nitrogenates the soil when it grows, so doesn't need any fertilizer. It uses 60% less water than cotton. And it nitrogenates the soil while it's growing. It absorbs carbon out of the air when it's growing. And then if you cut it down and make buildings out of it, which is happening, the building still will absorb carbon out of the air as a clean burning biofuel. It actually cleans the air. So it's fertilizing the soil. It's using 60% less water than corn or cotton or any of those other things. And it absorbs carbon out of the air. So when we're talking about the electrification, that was to clean the air. And I said, no, you don't have to talk about any of those things. Let's just talk about hemp. Hemp is the key to world peace.
It's amazing. What's so amazing to me is because when you do the research in World War II, hemp was very popular.
It was.
You know, they made rope and all kinds of things with the thing. But, you know, I think it's so important that we talk just a little bit more about the Siskel Intertribal, because
well, that's what Siskel's doing. We're talking about Siskel Intertribal Council.
Oh, okay. With the hemp, I'm sorry, I got off a little bit. But one of the things that I really found in doing my research is I came across the four pillars, which I think is so interesting the way it's announced. So I would like you to talk a little bit about them. What are the four pillars that you talk about?
So the four pillars, because you always want to, when you're talking and you're doing public education, you want to have a format or a basis for the education. So human rights, universal human rights, are really, really important. It protects all sentient life on this earth. But land stewardship is one of the pillars that we see the earth as a living mother that must be respected and have reciprocity. That means that you give back. You don't just take and to end the predator relationship or commodification of the earth and her materials and see her as a living being that we're in exchange with. That's land stewardship, following Native American earth practices. So that was human rights, then land stewardship and next generation and wellness. Those are the four pillars. So that's the foundation of our work. Next generation, all of our work is on behalf of the future generations, our children's children's children. And as Native Americans, we always look seven generations ahead of us. And that's how we were raised. Like, again, my grandfather, using organic, sustainable farming methods, that was creating healthy land, healthy food for his children and his children's children. Unfortunately, we abandoned that lifestyle, but some of us have gone back to it. And then wellness, the key to wellness is having a good, strong community. You know, all the centurion studies that National Geographic had done around the world, they went to communities where a large numbers of people had lived to 100 years, but they were still all active and involved. And the key component of all those centurion communities was that they had strong community. They had a strong sense of people that they worked with, that they played with, that they celebrated with. And so that's our basis of wellness. Again, using the land base as a community center, as a place that we can gather and do ceremony. And that helps us, you know, it gives us a teaching model, because we bought 24 acres in 1998, which has been paid for. And then we now, every square inch of the 23 acres is touched by human hands. It's taken us 20 years, but every aspect is Native American land management. What is called permaculture is actually indigenous land management. It's the hippies didn't invent it. The Native Americans took care of the land like this for thousands and thousands of years. So we have berms, we have arbors, we've done forest management, clearing all the understory, limbing all the trees. That's what's created all these huge firestorms we've experienced in Northern California, now down in Los Angeles, is the forests weren't maintained. It killed the earth stewards without talking to them about what they were doing to manage the land. And so that's what's brought us to this level of crisis we're at. Fortunately, because it's been so severe that the whole state of California now is into forest management. They were calling it fire prevention, but because of some of our elders, and we work really closely with the RCD over in Napa County, and they were saying fire management. I mentioned that to one of my mentors, Ron Good, down in Central Valley, and he said, oh, don't let them call it fire. It's forest management. It's forest management. And so they changed at the state level. They changed the vocabulary. So a lot of it is public education. It's part of the wellness. And, again, teaching the next generation to carry on.
And Madonna, let me ask you a question. How have you been influenced by all this? I mean, as a young woman growing up, I mean, you're a member at large, but you've been a member of the council. You know, you have your own background. When you listen to this, and here you are working so hard with other aspects of it, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, we don't have much time, so I would say, you know, it's an honor to be born into the family that I am. It was just, like, I think I was 21. I was really upset that I was named after my aunt, because I knew it would be a lifelong of a lot of work. But I quickly got over that. I mean, as a child, I was told, like, you're going to have to do this for your people. You'll do this for your people. And, you know, it didn't really make much sense then, but it does now. You know, hear my elder, Charlie, you know, I'm very protective of her. She is an elder, and she took care of my grandmother. drove my grandmother Norma and I all up and down, you know, California. And Jenny Marufo, who was a member of the Kashaya Stewart's Point tribe. So Charlie, you know, has been doing the work for the people my entire life. And so it's just an honor to sit with her, to protect her, whether that be, you know, at a coffee shop or, you know, in the road, whatever, you know, just spending time with her. It's a great thing. But, you know, right now, what I do work, I volunteer with students. And so a lot of the students, they are Native American, and they're wanting a safe and happy home. A lot of them, they do not have a two-parent household or even a parent. And so they are struggling with, why was I born? What did they, what, like, why are you bringing me into this risky situation? And so I'm working with them. I do a curriculum with them called Fatherhood and Motherhood is Sacred, which was created for Native Americans in prison and how to reconnect with their own children. So I'm doing that before the kids have kids. And so we have these really critical conversations about what are they going to do for their, if they become a parent, you know, making healthy choices. And I have a 21-year-old daughter. And so I'll just share this post that I did. The brain doesn't fully develop until the age of 25. The age range from 18 to 25 is such a critical formative time, especially for our Native youth. I've been having some deep, honest talks with my daughter lately about life, about relationships, about the importance of knowing her worth and protecting her energy. I remind her often, you don't need to be in risky situations or with older men who might not have the best interests at heart. I'm mentoring her in every way I can, emotionally, spiritually, and culturally, because I refuse to let her be just another statistic. So that's referencing MMIW, Missing Murdered Indigenous Women. And so with the life that I've had and the mentors that I've had, you know, including Charlie, it's, I'm passing it on, right? My daughter, or even my son, like, I've never cussed them out. I've never, beat them. You know, we talk about ACE scores now, and these ACE scores. So if you have a high ACE score, it's basically like, it's a health problem. Like, you probably will be dead if you have high ACE scores. So, you know, before this ACE score came about, I thought to myself, I don't want to raise my kids without food or clothing, healthcare, dentals, things like that. So, you know, just raising them. And with Suskul Intertribal Council, we have a newsletter that goes out. So Charlie has been doing Staying on the Path, which is the front cover for Forever. And so I had asked her, you know, can I just write basically kind of like how I treat my children? And so the header on that is called Loving and Nurturing Your Native American Child. And so before the MMIW had a name, I knew that I didn't want my babies to be dead. So MMIW starts at home for me.
Well, it's really important. I mean, that's such important work. I mean, I really like the idea of you expressing it in a newsletter, because it's not just for you. You're putting it out in the community, because that's what we need. We need more
public
community
education. Yeah, that's our
more public and more community and more understanding. I mean, what you said, what was so interesting, what Charlie said earlier when she talked about the sickness, the abused children. Mm-hmm. You know, they did a thing on Stalin and Hitler. There was a like a documentary, and they showed both of them were abused by their father. So, I mean, there's a lot of support around that. You know, I need to put you on the spot. I need to bring you back to do a second interview, because one of the things in doing, we can even do it on the phone. In doing my research, I found out that you're going to be having this Native American Historical Traditional Healing Project, which I think is just amazing. It's going to be happening.
We've been doing it for 15 years.
It's going to be, and it's amazing what you're covering.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that. You know, before you know it, we're going to be out of time. If you can just give us a little bit
of... our website, you can get all the information and explanation. I actually emailed you so you'd have it for reference, the description of Cohort 20 that's starting in July, the fourth weekend. So we do it by Zoom, so you can be any place. But it's the history of what happened to Native Americans here in California. And we approach it like a crime scene. Who, what, where, when, and how. And it starts from Southern California, just follows a timeline. There's maps, timelines, dates, who, where, what, when, and how, but what happened with the Native Americans. And the major purpose of that is to dispel the myths around Native Americans. There's a lot of untruths and myths, and you were falling into some of that a little bit with your stereotype. And one of the things we teach is there's no such thing as a positive stereotype. And again, the invisibilization of the tribe. So it really puts in really clear, researchable, other people can go and document it. And it's being used as a template for the state of California to develop an accurate curriculum for the history of California going forward. We got it funded, mental health dollars in Napa County. So we've been doing this for 10 years now. This is cohort 20. We do two a year, and it's 5 monthly workshops by Zoom. And if you go to our website, sescocouncil.org, you can find it.
Well, time goes by so fast when you're having a good time, and we just covered so many things. It's just amazing. So give me the website one last time, and your website.
Okay, it's suscolcouncil.org, suscolcouncil.org. And also this Saturday I'm going to be in Sonoma talking, because we didn't get to the agriculture, earth caring places, but that's what I'll be talking about on a panel at Dos Bar, on Broadway in Sonoma around the wineries and what they could be doing to care for the earth better and be more in balance.
Can you send me information? We'll put it on our website.
Sure.
We'll get it up right away.
And for me, Madonna Feather on Facebook or MadonnaFeather.com. And this Saturday I will be at the Napa Valley College. Indian Ed is holding a Native American gathering there from 1 to 5 p.m.
Well, I want to thank you both for being on Women's Spaces. This has been a wonderful experience.
Thank you for having Women's Spaces.
No, I think it's just been a wonderful experience to be able to talk about these things. And I think one of the things that you brought out, Charlie, that is so, so important is that we have to stop denying things. We have to look at face and we have to say, this is happening. You know, we are a racist.
Deal with the truth, yeah.
Yeah, deal with the truth. You know, and you know, the truth, when you start dealing with things, you know, it's a lot easier when you're dealing with the truth, because otherwise it's not. Okay, are we, okay. Well, anyway, I want to thank Charlie Toledo and Madonna Feather Cruz for being such wonderful, wonderful guests. All their information will be on Women's Spaces, www.womenspaces.com. And like I do at the end of every show, I remind folks our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. You know, we have to invest. You know, children live what they learn. Anyway, this is Elaine D. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces, and I want to remind you it'll be on again at 11 o'clock this evening. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
Because a woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 21st, 2025.